Hey folks, Troy Anderson here from KettlebellFatLossTraining.com and KettlebellWorkoutVideos.com. That's our free content site where you can get tons of great stuff. I'm really, really excited here today to we've got Greg Swanson on the line. He is the Warrior Mind Coach, got multiple programs and products out there for you. I think kind of his key, it looks like his key program is the Warrior Mind Training Package. And I'm so excited because the more you learn about things, kind of the more you realize, the less you know. But I think I've come to this is that if we can master our mind, which we'll talk with Greg about today, then I think we can probably do anything. And that's something I've always believed, but I think this is kind of the basis of it. We're going to talk about a lot of things on how people can turn 180s and flip switches and see what they're going to do in relevancy to lots of success in life, but also in regards in relevancy to fat loss and body composition changes. So thanks for stopping on with us today, Greg. I'm so excited to hear what you have to say about some stuff.
Oh, man, Troy, thank you so much. It's great to catch up again. And this is just a great topic because I've been a personal trainer as well. I love to use the body and physical fitness to represent, to be a metaphor for other places in life. So, you know, what you're doing with folks with the kettlebells and the fat loss is just fantastic. And then what hopefully we can do here today is help people understand that when they work with you and the physical, they can also work with themselves in the mental, and that will transfer to elsewhere in their life.
Yeah, awesome. Well, let's get started here. I was just actually working with some clients, some real high performer type clients, as there are a couple of doctors that run a very successful practice, and so there, I would not consider them from a mental standpoint, or necessarily physical, because they kind of go hand in hand. Standpoint, necessarily your average type trainee, but it was interesting. The one doctor, the husband and wife team, she was telling me about going to her hot yoga class, and how she rolled up there, and it was a relatively small class, and before class was starting, she was listening to conversation amongst some of the other students, and as me and you probably both know, if applied well, yoga is a very mental practice, and she heard one of the ladies, well, you know, the one of the ladies is going, well, I'm only good for 45 minutes today, and the client that I'm, this doctor that I'm training, she's thinking, yep, you probably will only be good for 45 minutes a day then. And the other gal is going, oh, I've only been to a couple sessions, and I'm probably going to suck. And my client's going, yep, you're probably going to suck too. So what kind of – how do people get into those mental traps? And maybe what are some ways for them to kind of unspring those traps that they've set on themselves?
Wow. And how long do we have to talk, Troy?
yeah, let's see if we can pare it down to a few things. But let's see what some of your quick action tips might be on that.
Right. Well, interesting is that one of the things that, you know, to get to where, how these things start, it is a myriad of processes. You know, between 0 and 6 is when we form what we call our core beliefs, our core values. And there's a process of values that we form in life, and those values are like hooks that we hang our separate beliefs on. And when we have enough of those similar beliefs, we call it a belief system. This is very high level, Troy. You know, we can get into it further on future calls and stuff, but just to give a basis of this. And it's interesting that beliefs are self-fulfilling in that what we speak represents our beliefs, and the fact that we speak them supports our beliefs. So when we speak that, oh, I'm only going to be good for 45 minutes, they have to live up to that, and their unconscious mind will start to collapse their endurance after around 40 minutes and 45 minutes. They're going to go, yep, see, I knew I was right, where they just self-fulfilled their prophecy, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that comes from, and you know what's interesting is you look at that phrase, they have, that person taught themselves very, very well how to do that, 45 mm-hmm. minutes. They've programmed themselves excellently. They are perfect at that. And if they just take that same process and apply it to 50 minutes, 60 minutes, it would work. It's not that they don't know how to or they can't go 60 minutes. It's that they've trained themselves perfectly on how to go only 45 minutes. So the start of these limiting beliefs, when a limiting belief or a belief would start with a thought first. A thought has really no charge. It has no energy behind it. It's just kind of a thought. You think of something and go, that's interesting. But when you think something and then start to experience it or learn it over and over, then that becomes a belief. So, for example, if this individual had been going to yoga, hot yoga, for a couple of years, and she says, I wonder how long I'm going to last. Let me see if I can last 45 minutes. And this is just an example, Troy. I'm not too sure.
Sure.
Absolutely. But she may have gone for the first time, like the other person with them, and said, you know what, let me see if I can go for 45 minutes. And she gets there, 45 minutes, great. That felt good. 45 minutes is good. She keeps going, sets 45. All of a sudden the thought, because of her experience, is now a belief. And now she hasn't passed that, so her belief now is, I can only go 45 minutes, because she had a thought, which she could have gone further, but that thought said, oh, I'll go to 45 minutes, I'm going to stop. So after repetition, you know, learning is the mother of, or repetition is the mother of learning. Learning repetition is the mother of beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And so that belief has set in there, and their unconscious will do everything possible to make sure that that comes true.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So to the second part of your question, what are some quick ways around it? The very first thing, and this sounds so easy, but because we are so involved with multitasking, which I'm not a big fan of, because you can't give anything your direct attention, like they may be going into that yoga class, just off a phone call, just putting some work aside, and they haven't sat before the class and visualized themselves succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
So the first key is to be aware of the thoughts that we're thinking and the words that we're speaking. As humans, we tend to discount the words. We go, oh, I was just kidding. I really didn't mean that. Well, the words that we choose and say is directly correlated to the beliefs that we have. And by simply poo-pooing them off, that doesn't work. So to be aware, so if the person, you know, said, oh, I'm only going to last 45 minutes, standing here right now before that class, how do you know that? Well, I did it before, right, but how do you know right now, before you go into this class, standing here right now in front of the class, that you can only last 45 minutes? How do you know that for sure? Then that starts to loosen up those boundaries of the beliefs going, well, I really don't know. I just think I'm going to. Oh, but you could think something, right? So
I've read several different people stuff. I mean, the one that rings true in my head is Wayne Dyer's stuff. Is it true or is it not true, you know, in that moment in time?
Right. And these are things that a person can ask themselves. Once they start to do self-inquiry, this what I call loosens their hold of what their reality is, what they believe is. And it doesn't necessarily change it, but it at least loosens it up to say, you know what, this might not be true, this might be true. And one of the things that once you start to loosen up, and we'll use these two people as an example, Troy, because I think they're fantastic examples. If the one lady started saying, you know what, I really don't know if that's true or not. You know, geez, that's not really a powerful thing to say to myself is, you know, if I really want to achieve a level of fitness through yoga, I really would like to come in here for 60 minutes. And, you know, this is very limiting belief. So let me see what I do. So she may go in there and do 45 minutes. Well, the next day or 2 days later, when she pulls up in the parking lot, if she would take 5 minutes, breathe, close her eyes, and visualize the end of class and visualize it being 50 minutes and sit down and visualize it and see what she would see, hear what she would hear, feel what she would feel when 50 minutes is up, she would have a lot better chance of finishing 50 minutes than 45 minutes.
Yeah. So in a sense, I've seen this a few different places, and maybe you could elaborate on it. When she starts to attach feeling and emotion to 50 minutes as opposed to the belief that she can only do 45 minutes, then it can become real. Is that kind of in the right direction?
Yeah, very, very good. Very good. There's a difference between believing something and then experiencing it and then having the faith in it. You know, for an example, this is a very powerful example I use with some folks. And, you know, imagine that you're a world-class sprinter and you go up to the starting line and you're thinking, I'm not going to win this race. I mean, if your listeners and if you just feel that energy, if you were going to go up to a starting line going, you know what, I'm not going to win this race, completely bad energy.
Yeah.
So now you approach the starting line, you know, you wipe out that energy, you approach the starting line, and you go, you know what, I think I can win this race. I believe I can win this race. And you're looking across and seeing all the people around you. You go, yeah, I believe I can. It's a little bit higher energy. It's a little bit more confident energy, but it's just not there. So then I ask you and your listeners, you come up to the starting line. You still believe that you can win the race. The gun goes off. You run down. You're the first one to finish. You have won the race. What is that feeling? Completely different than going up to the line believing you can win it. So when you visualize executing, like this lady, when she visualizes finishing at 50 minutes, how will she feel then? How will it feel to be completed? Not to feel that, not to believe that she can, but feel that she has. There's a completely different energy in that. And that's this is what's really, really important for, you know, for individuals who are having a tough time working out. They visualize themselves successfully completing the workout and how they feel, and then they go into the workout.
That's very, very good. I mean, there's a whole – I mean, even in just in the tone of our voices, or even if people are just imagining that whole sequence of things, it's you can feel like almost – and I've heard people talk about higher vibrational energy and stuff like that. The difference in – just in the tone of voice when you talk it audibly, and maybe you could talk about that, because I believe a lot of people, and maybe you can elaborate again, believe that verbally saying it out loud makes a pretty big difference.
Yeah, and there is, you know, there's that the question about do affirmations work, and Tony Robbins calls them incantations. Some people call them affirmations. Others call them declarations. And it is, and Troy, you point out very well that it is at an energetic level, and this may be, you know, energy and kettlebell. Sometimes, you know, it's the iron and the softness. But you can, when you approach, you know, to a 24 kilogram kettlebell for a snatch, you have to build up a certain amount of energy to go 5 minutes and do 100, 110 snatches, right? I mean, you have to have that energy there. So when you're doing verbalization out loud, if you just kind of say it like, oh, yeah, I'm going to last 50 minutes, I'm going to last 50 minutes, I'm going to last 50, that really doesn't do much. One, it doesn't believe, your belief behind it isn't there. It's like, I'm going to lose the race, but you say, I'm going to win the race with the same tone. So then you can change that a little bit and go, you know, I believe I can. So you raise it up. When you say, I can last 50 minutes, I will last 50 minutes, that is the same energy that you want to exhibit as if you have just finished the 50 minutes. So, you know, 24 kilogram snatch for 5 minutes, you go, yes, I will do it. You know, you really get pumped up, because after you get done with it, it feels great. So you affirm it in that energy. With that is the state, the physical state, how you stand, how you walk, your posture. You know, our state is so important when working with our energy. If you're kind of slumped over, you know, walking along the street with your head watching the top of your shoes, and you go, I'm rich and successful, that really is contradictory messages. But if you can, when you stand up straight and act as if you have already lost 20 pounds, how will you walk? How will you talk? How will you, what will you do? That helps program your unconscious mind to release that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I just had a thought here, and I think it folds into this kind of neatly to you go off of your sprinters analogy. Athletes, because athletes have generally been athletes since a young age, have a very clear identity with what a finish line or completing a performance is, and the feeling associated with that. I mean, in a way, for athletes, it's probably almost a drug. And obviously, there's a lot of our population out there that is overweight, and they have no perception, so to speak, of what it might be to be 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 pounds, 100 pounds, or have their ideal body that the athlete has associated with a performance and then the feeling that they get from that performance.
Mm-hmm.
And to use the, and it sounds like, if I'm trying to put the pieces together correctly, it's easy to say, well, I can only do 45 minutes, or even if you're really ambitious, like a lot of people might be, and try to believe themselves into it, but there's probably still a piece of their mind, subconscious, I don't know the proper terminology, that's kind of saying, yeah, BS, you've never done it before. But when you start to put that feeling or that thought, kind of that visualization, and then verbalizing maybe what the accomplishment of it will feel like, that kind of puts them in the right direction. Is that pretty close?
Yeah, very very similar. And this is where goal setting, and Troy, that when people hear the word goal setting, I don't hit them because I don't accomplish them. Well, that's because you've been setting them wrong.
Yeah,
and there are some aspects with NLP that talks about an achievable outcome, and then we've all heard of SMART goals, and I actually use the acronym SMARTER goals. But one of the things with the SMART goal, and this will help with that a little bit, I think, or I hope, is that the A in a SMART goal is it achievable?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I coach somebody, is it achievable? I don't ask them, is it achievable by you, but has anybody else achieved this goal to show that it can be done?
Mm-hmm.
Because what one can do, anybody can do.
Yeah.
Then the R is realistic. Is this realistic to you? Have you exhibited something similar? And what's interesting, Troy, is that they don't have to have done that exact goal, but they could have done something that required the same amount of energy and they did it elsewhere in their life.
Mm-hmm.
So, if they were a salesperson or they were a CEO or they were a doctor or a nurse and they worked, two double shifts, they put all this energy in, but they say, oh, I can't lose this weight. Wait a second, you put great energy over here. You have that energy.
Mm-hmm.
You've learned how to use that energy. Let's take that energy and use it over here. So it is realistic for you to put that energy that you exhibited for 2 days straight in the operating room, condense it, and put it for 1 hour over here. So this is – what happens is a lot of times clients look at realistic as, I've never lifted 100 pounds before, so I can't do it. So my goal of lifting, a bench press of, let's say 135 for somebody.
Sure.
They say, well, I've never lifted it before, so it's not realistic. Well, has anybody lifted it? Yes. Has anybody lifted it at your age? Yes, most likely. So you look at where else have you exhibited a point in your life where you didn't think you could do something and you did it. So let's look at that. Well, I never thought I would be able to be the sales manager. Well, you did it. Great. So you didn't think you could do it and you did it. Let's take that energy and put it over here. So that's part of it, right, is this goal setting of appropriate goals that people understand that they have it in them to do. The other tweak to this, and this gets back to visualization, is there's this concept of disassociation and association with your goal. To put it very plainly, a disassociation is as if you're watching yourself, as if you're watching a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So you see yourself crossing the finish line. You see yourself standing on the podium. You see yourself standing on a scale, and it's showing, 115 pounds. And there's this fine line where you want to have that out there as a disassociated goal to create what they call a future pull, to create an energy to go forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
But then you use an associated visualization of the specific tasks needed to get there. For example, a skier, an Olympic skier, mm-hmm. they're racing because they want the gold medal, right? I mean, it's obvious, otherwise they wouldn't be in the Olympics.
Right.
But when they visualize, they don't visualize themselves standing on the podium all the time. They just kind of go, okay, this is great. What they do is they visualize themselves performing their ski run perfectly.
Okay.
And when they see it in first person, so they see themselves looking down at the snow. They see the skis going through the turns. They see the poles being planted. They feel their body shifting. They feel every single part of it as if they are really experiencing it. This conditions the unconscious mind for them to perform that way, so they know what to do. Mm-hmm. Let's bring this back to realistic for individuals who want to get rid of some fat.
Mm-hmm. Well,
they disassociate themselves. They see themselves buying new clothes that are going to fit. They are, you know, fit a smaller size. They see themselves in a disassociated fashion, standing on the scale. But when they visualize themselves going to the gym, lifting the weights, moving the kettlebells as if they are that person.
Mm.
And they see the kettlebell flying overhead. They see it. They see themselves doing a Turkish get up. They see themselves in first person doing it and feeling great about it. So when they get to the workout, that's what's going to happen.
That's really powerful. I think it can maybe just back to kind of things that are going on in society. Using that SMART acronym, what was it again? Accessible? Is that what the A is for again?
Well, yeah, it's specific, you know, for the S. Well, just
yep,
for the,
yep.
for the, so
specific.
S is specific.
Measurable.
So, M is measurable, so specific. Not I want to lose weight. I want to lose 10 pounds. So,
uh-huh.
So the M is measurable, right? It is measurable, 10 pounds. A is, is it achievable?
Okay, that's and where I was coming back to, right?
Achievable, right, for anybody.
Yeah.
And then the R is realistic, T is time bound. So when are you going to do it?
Mm-hmm.
And then I add the E and R is mm-hmm. this is really great for fitness. The E means to evaluate. Evaluate
mm-hmm.
your progress constantly, which means you have to keep a journal.
Yeah.
And then R is basically reassess. If it's not working, do something else.
Yeah. I want to fold this back to achievable. Do you think and be it what it may be, whatever our opinions are on what they're doing from an exercise standpoint, but do you think that is part of like how The Biggest Loser, the show itself, gains momentum? Because each time, again, in business we call it social proof or whatever, but each they're making it in those people's minds, the people that want to be on the show that in the next season, achievable, right? They're proving to them every single time almost.
Exactly. I mean, and you did hit a good point of social proof from Candini's book and stuff. But if you look at it, not just from those who go on the show,
yeah.
But you and any other coach
yeah.
or trainer
yeah.
can use that for one of their severe overweight clients. Hey, listen, it's achievable. These people did it. Have you ever seen The Biggest Loser? Have you ever seen, you know, Body for Life? Have you ever seen the? They can do it. It's achievable. Now.
Mm-hmm.
Realistic for yourself, let's take a look at that. Is it, you
mm-hmm.
know, realistic and let's have you done something to this extent before? So you're right on with that when somebody else has done it, it doesn't mean that they're special. I mean, people
mm-hmm.
are special, but you know what I'm saying, right? It doesn't mean that,
mm-hmm.
that they're the
yeah.
only one in the world that can do it,
yeah.
that others can do it. So the A really is important to hit home with clients in that it is achievable. Because once somebody thinks it's achievable, and that's that shift, that's a slow shift when somebody goes, oh, you know what, that's not possible. Well, is it not possible, period, or not possible for you? And then
mm-hmm.
if you think it's not possible for you, that's a belief. Let's look into that because it is
mm-hmm.
possible because Jane, John, Tom, Mary, Sally all did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very interesting. Here's something to kind of play on the devil's advocate side of things. I mean, a lot of people that we're going to run into, if they're overweight, they've probably done some pretty significant things in their life one way or the other. But one of the kind of always cop-outs I call it cop-out excuse, whatever we want to, is people will might argue that they had the energy to do that then, or they don't have enough time to do that now. How do you re-straighten them down a path, or help them re-straighten themselves down the path, and again, kind of prove to themselves that they do have the energy and time to do this again, this type of thing again?
Right, and this is, you know, this is the job, I would say, of a coach, not necessarily a trainer, but if a trainer has been, you know, with a coach, because you don't want to sit with your client for a whole hour trying to
right.
get into their mind. You want them moving, right?
Yeah.
Let's get them moving.
Yeah.
Let's do some jumping jacks. Let's do something. Well,
mm-hmm.
but it's a really good point, because this is a belief that, you know, these are beliefs that have slowly formed over time. And when somebody, and it's really interesting how individuals, whether successful, not successful, we all tend to generalize
mm-hmm.
things. And we generalize them based on what we perceive as being an important value or a belief at that time. So, Troy, without getting into values, because mm-hmm. one thing that I did, just as a short subject here, one thing that I did, worked with a client, is that they wanted to go to the gym, but they didn't, and they couldn't figure out why. Well, they finally, just through some talking, found that they value family time more than themselves. So they
mm-hmm.
felt being at the gym took them away from their family.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with them saying, well, if you don't go to the gym, you're probably going to die early, so you're not going to be with your family. And that's in a very short encapsulated version.
Right.
But that created enough of a shift to them to see that it was important to go to the gym so that they could be there for their family and their grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't change their values. I just used their values to support their belief.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to, I don't have enough time.
Yeah.
Well, usually what I ask them is, what are you doing at 4:00 in the morning?
Mm-hmm.
Sleeping. Well, you got time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that they don't have time, right? But that's a very convenient excuse. But then when you challenge them, well, no, I'm sleeping, I'm tired. Oh, but you said you don't have time, but there is time there, right? And it sounds like being a smartass, but
mm-hmm.
it really isn't, because it's getting the person to let go of that global or that ubiquitous belief that I don't have time. Right, you have to start shaking that belief. Is that really true? You don't have time, or you just don't want to make the time? Now, if you don't want to make the time, we need to evaluate what's going to happen if you don't. And the energy, you know how much energy it takes to sit and eat, and you know you do have the energy, because I'm sure that you know, if you threw an example out there, well, if you had to go get your child a mile away, they were hit by a car and nobody was around, would you be able to go to that mile? Well, of course they would. So they have the energy.
Yeah.
They just believe they don't.
Yeah.
So by questioning them, and again, it sounds like a smartass, but it really isn't, with the whole purpose is, and this, Troy, I have to say that this is all with the presupposition that individual truly wants to lose the weight
or
get
good.
In shape. Right, they truly want to. They have, and this is getting back to achievable outcome. Is the if losing that weight is somebody else's desire for them and not their
mm-hmm.
own, they're not
mm-hmm.
going to do it. If the doctor told them to lose weight, but they don't have any stake in it, they're not going to do it. So the key is, first, if they want to lose weight, whose goal is it? Whose mission is it? Is it the wife? Is it the kids? Is it
mm-hmm.
the person who's coming to – is the person in front of you, is that their mission?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have any tips on helping people get really clear? Because, I mean, I think people can kind of lead themselves in many different directions on that and, you know, be the sacrificial lamb that I need to do this for this, that, or the other. Any tips for helping people to get really clear on whether it is something they really want or not?
Well, yeah, in NLP, there's a presupposition that every behavior is based in good intention, meaning that there's a payoff for the individual.
Mm-hmm.
So even if an individual is overweight and they eat lousy, there's a payoff there for them, and it may be
mm-hmm.
that the food is making them feel good. So
mm-hmm.
They enjoy the after effects of the food. Unfortunately, the after effects also are the weight, but there's a payoff on there. And to find out what they derive from that, what payoff, what pleasure, say, you know, and ask them, isn't there, let's find another way of achieving that, of achieving that pleasure. And if you get that pleasure satisfied through exercise and through fitness and through other things, wouldn't that, you know, would that satisfy you in that? And, you know, a lot of times they will. But if a person goes to a doctor because his wife or husband told them to go, they're overweight, the doctor says, you have to start exercising, and the person says, no, I just don't want to. So they come to you and go, what? I really don't want to exercise, but my husband's making me. That would be a time for a personal trainer to bring in a coach. Because it would be, okay, let's look at the benefits that you're deriving from eating poorly and not exercising. What are you gaining from it? What do you think it's doing for your life? The coach would work with them on that and then say, okay, here's now you've shifted. So here's the pain that is possible. Do you see how this is going to shorten your life? Do you see how this is going to create mobility issues in the future? Do you see how this is going to increase your health care cost? Do you see how – and really build up that pain, and then the coach would work on the pleasure side and kind of work on, do you see how you're going to be able to go hiking with your kids now? Do you see how you're going to be able to, you know, participate in more physical activities? How is that going to make your life better? And the coach would work on, you know, increasing the pain a little bit and increasing the pleasure and having them shift so that the goal of losing weight would then be theirs as opposed to somebody else's. And so I got to say, these are all fantastic, great, great questions. And I'm feeling kind of bad that I can't go into more detail on them because each one of those we could do a whole show on.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Is it as simple as somebody were to try to put this practice in their head that, I mean, there's a lot, I think there's a lot of people out there that, what's the word I'm looking for, intellectually know they need to do something, need to work out, and know that they're not doing something, they're not eating healthful foods, they're not sleeping enough, whatever it may be. Is it as simple, I mean, starting the process as simple as, I'm just thinking out loud here, as going down a list of pros and cons? What of, if I do this, you know, like if I continue on with my activities, what are the pros and cons? And then if I change to this, if then going down pros and cons of that potentially too?
Yeah, that would be a great start. And I would actually even do one step further is look at the current behavior and appreciate the current behavior for what it's doing, because that behavior works. They've taught themselves how to do something very, very well, as opposed to going, you know what, I'm such a stupid jerk. I know I'm supposed to eat, but I don't. Hey, you've created such a strong behavior and such a strong belief and such a strong habit that even under scientific evidence, you still do something different. Wow, that is amazing. How did you teach yourself to do that? And have them go through that. Now let's use that same process for something else. So, you know, to get back to your list is, I would list the benefits first of maintaining that current behavior. This is where a person's going to be able to dive into, why am I doing this? What are my payoffs? What am I deriving from it? And it, you know, if they can keep digging down and saying, well, I feel comfort, I feel love, I feel accepted, I feel, or I'm protecting myself from being seen by people, this is a protection for me. Then you can go, oh, okay, great, you know, if this is this issue and you're doing, you know, you're overeating or not exercising because you either don't want to be seen by people or whatever, you can work on that. And then once you discover the motivation behind that behavior, then you can flip it and go, okay, if I continue this, what's going to happen? I think it really helps to for an individual to look at some of the driving factors behind it. It'll help illuminate the behavior as well as how they taught themselves to do that so that they can take that same process and teach themselves how to do something more beneficial.
And do you think part of the power in that is – that people can then say to themselves, why am I doing this thing with this big list of things that potentially are negative to myself when I could be doing this? I mean, is that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, the question why. And it's a catch-22 in a sense where you want to understand behavior. They could ask themselves, what's driving this behavior? But here's where the unconscious really it takes things literal. So if you ask, why am I doing this? It's going to tell you why. It's not going to give you an answer on how to change.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to keep reinforcing that behavior by saying, well, because this, it's not going to ask to change. So you can ask the question, what is driving me to do this? And mm-hmm. then how can I use this same drive for something better? You know,
okay.
So when a person starts asking, how can I get excited about working out? How can I get excited about eating better? How can I, as opposed to, why do I continually eat like crap?
Mm-hmm.
Because your unconscious is going to tell you because it's going to come up with all these negative things.
Mm-hmm.
Where if the person asks themselves, how can I make this more fun?
Mm.
It may not come – the answer may not come immediately, but if the person keeps asking those questions, how can I make exercise more fun? How can I make eating healthy more enjoyable? If they keep asking themselves those questions, they're going to start to get answers, and they have to trust those answers because that's their unconscious talking to them. And mm-hmm. then there will be a shift will start to happen.
Gotcha. And we kind of touched on or went in a direction of some stuff that there's – probably a lot of information out there about, but I would like to hear what your kind of system or program for it might be. A lot of people, when we write our goals or trying to trigger our minds or access our minds to guide us in the directions that we want to go, write these things down, have audios of them, whatever it may be. What's kind of the system that you think is the most valuable that you've seen in practice for doing that, and what kind of daily repetitions does somebody shoot for? I mean, I assume more the better, but kind of stuff that you kind of put into real life application.
Fantastic. That's great. And just to start us off on this little journey is that whoever is listening, however old the person is, myself, you, whoever, it has taken us a lifetime of repetitions to get here.
Mm-hmm.
Right, to get where we are. So to think that an overnight you're going to change your belief structure and your habits is setting yourself up for failure. It's taken a whole lifetime to get to where you are right now. It's not going to necessarily take a whole lifetime because we got to this point unconsciously, meaning not your unconscious mind, but in a trance where you've been asleep. So hopefully by this interview and by the work that you're doing with your clients, you can wake them up to it to see how they purposefully can create their physique and their reality going forward. So having said that, one of the things I love to use is the NLP model of an achievable outcome, which is more long-term. So I use that for my 1 year. Achievable outcome is, there are some aspects that are very similar to a SMART goal, and I have it on my blog, some achievable outcome formats on it that people can go see, or they can just do NLP achievable outcome on the net, and they'll find it. I use that for more of a long-term goal. That part of that is what we talked about before, is the goal self-initiated, or is it somebody else's? You know, is it maintained by me, or do I have to rely on somebody else? What resources do I have? What resources do I need? Again, it should be specific. Is it ecological? These are all part of an achievable outcome. Is it ecological, meaning is it good for me? Is it good for others? Is it good for my community? And that community can be defined however. But it's just a long-term, a big-term picture, if you will, out a year. Then I break it down into SMART goals, like, for example, 1 month, 3 month, 6 month, 9 month SMART goals to get me to that achievable outcome. And I would break down, okay, if I want to deadlift 410 pounds. That means I have to do every time, once a week, I have to add 5 pounds to my deadlift to get to this level. Okay, that's great. So at 3 months from now, I should be deadlifting this amount of weight, and I see it. It's specific. It's measurable. And then I break that even down further as to what do I need to do every day. So one is that there's an action plan that goes with the goal and the dream. Well, the goal, not the dream. The dream is I like to use it as more as a fantasy, but the goal, the desire. Right. So you have the achievable outcome. You break it down into subsets, into SMART goals, and then you break down from now for the 3 months the specific action steps that I'm going to be taking. So I know that when I get to the gym, when I go on Mondays, it's deadlift day, and this is what I have to do, so I know what I do. So those are the action steps. Then what I'll do is first thing in the morning, I will visualize my workout. I will see myself going to the gym, grabbing the bars, putting on the extra 5 pounds, and just tensing up and lifting it and feeling how good it's going to be. I see myself doing that, and I will do that a couple of – because the visualization really only takes less than 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll visualize myself doing that for each of those sets, because I know that achievable outcome is there, and I know that these are the steps to do it, and if I just keep taking these small steps, so I don't visualize that final outcome. I know it's there.
Mm-hmm.
What I have to visualize is the successful steps to get there. And that's where I think a lot of folks do, is they visualize themselves standing in front of the mirror ripped and buff, but they don't visualize themselves what steps are necessary to go there. They just kind of go to the gym or, you know, swing kettlebells or whatever. They do it haphazardly without a vision in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So keeping that daily or every other day performance visualized. And then in addition, if I'm standing in line or if I'm walking my dog, I will do affirmations out loud, and I'll stand the way I would as if I have already completed that affirmation. I mean, here, all this stuff, Troy, really requires no extra time.
Right.
Right? It's like you could be driving to work and doing your affirmations. You could be at a stoplight and close your eyes real quick and visualize. Don't worry, the person behind you is going to honk the horn when it's time to stop visualizing.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great tip right there. Yeah.
Right? So there's that visualization part. But here's what I think a lot of folks say they want to do but don't, and it's managing that energy. You know, when you want to increase your aerobic threshold, you have to push your anaerobic threshold, right? You have to get up there to almost point of exhaustion. Well, that's one end of it. But what do people do to lower their heart rate and meditate? That increases the whole volume of the container.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If you only push the top and leave the bottom the same, it's going to take you a lot long to increase that container, where if you push the top and lower the bottom, then that container is a lot larger. So we are striving all the time, working out, going, getting stuck in traffic. So at the end of the day, when you come home from work, or just I would not say before bed, but I would what I do is around 4 or 5, sit and meditate for a half hour.
Okay.
Just completely and the meditation could be include a visualization of your future life. What I don't like to say what it shouldn't be, but just to give some point of reference, it wouldn't be, okay, what TV shows am I going to watch tonight? What am I going to do tomorrow? You know, that is not meditation. That's worry.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, a really simple process would be visualization of the daily activity, the next day's activity that you want to do, affirmations as you're driving or walking, as if it has been accomplished, and then meditation daily to lower that threshold. That would do wonders for people.
Okay, very cool. And that kind of leads me to, meditation was in my mind for another question. I don't think a lot of people grasp the concept of meditation. I actually have it on an action item of things that I try to do at least a couple, two, three times a week is my goal, actually, and not for a half hour yet, but I'm working there. And that said, I just try to do diaphragmatic breathing with mine. I actually try not to think about anything per se, but that's interesting. That kind of gives me a little bit more free realm to talk about for me to have that conversation with myself. But there's a lot of people out there in this super stressed, overstimulated environment that I don't think grasp any of it.
Right.
For a novice person wanting to try to meditate and giving it a try, what should they do? And I think there's probably a lot of people that say, well, I'm just sitting here wasting time is going to be their answer to things. Why is this important to me? I could be doing something else. So if you maybe go into a little bit more on that, that'd be awesome.
Right, absolutely. And you make a very good point, Troy, about, you know, doing 5 minutes, 10 minutes. My example was what I do,
mm-hmm.
30 minutes. And a teacher of mine talked about, it's going to sound funny, but it actually can be dangerous for somebody who's never meditated to try to meditate for 30 minutes. And
mm-hmm.
if you think about a huge stone wheel spinning 100 miles an hour, that's our mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put your hand there to stop it.
yeah.
Right? It's like, it's screeching. There's going to be some danger with that. So there are some things that I like to utilize in the process. There are some what they call bilateral music that you can listen to when you meditate.
Mm-hmm.
I think music is awesome to listen to without words, because words will start to trigger pictures in our mind, and we'll start chasing that rabbit down one hole mm-hmm. and down another. But just great music, Baroque music, classical music that is very calm and relaxing. If you just listen to that and sit still, even with your eyes open, and do that for 5-10 minutes, that's starting to slow that wheel down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we're in a society of instant, right? We want instant everything, and we've heard mm-hmm. this ever since the microwave came along, and we want instant meditation. Well, it really isn't that easy. It can be. However, why not make it more enjoyable
mm-hmm.
as opposed to burning your hands on this stone wheel that's going 100 miles an hour?
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's very funny that you bring this up, because I'm in the process of developing some meditation and some bilateral audios pertaining to fitness and some other things that people can use to sit and just meditate. And
mm-hmm.
where the soundtracks come in handy, specifically the Baroque and bilateral, is when a person is very experienced at meditation, their brain waves start to slow down. So we're in beta, and you go to alpha, and you go to theta and delta, and all these are different states of the brain that we go
mm-hmm.
through when we're starting to fall asleep. Well, our brain has mirror neurons and other things in it that will reflect a lot of the stuff that we're hearing. So by putting headphones on and with music that is around the, you know, the theta wavelength, just listening to it, your brain waves are going to start to slow down.
Huh.
It's just going to naturally – it's like if you ever heard a drum, just somebody drumming at about 60 beats per minute, and that's all you heard, and this is, you know, shamans do this.
Mm-hmm.
After about 5 minutes – just listening to the drum, you're going to feel so relaxed. Even just sitting there with your eyes open, it's going to go, wow, because your heart's going to start to beat to the drum, your body's going to start to beat to the drum, and your brain's just, it just is very relaxing. So that would be a great start, is getting, you know, some Baroque music, you know, chamber music that has 60 beats per minute to it.
Mm-hmm.
Are these bilateral ones, which put in two different frequencies, and one in your left and one in your right, and your brain kind of synchronizes those together. That would be a great way. And then as you progress, you know, from 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 13 minutes, whatever, once you get to a half hour, then start it again with the music. And then as the end, take the music off while you're in that state for 5 minutes and just sit there for 5 minutes. So it's a process, right? If you look at it as a fun process, you know, eventually you'll be sitting there with your eyes open, quiet for 10 minutes. Then you do it with your eyes closed, and pretty soon you will be able to sit there with your eyes closed meditating for a half hour.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, the other question you asked is, you know, how is it a benefit? People think they're wasting time. And this is what's scary, is that we don't see what goes on in our insides, right? We don't see our parasympathetic nervous system always on. We don't give our sympathetic nervous system time to kick in, except for when we're asleep, and even then, not so much. And if the trainers and the coaches can help individuals understand that with a busy lifestyle that we're on, we always have our parasympathetic nervous system firing, right? That's the cortisol, the adrenaline, all the stuff that really causes dis-ease in our body.
Mm-hmm.
And to counteract that, we have to let our sympathetic nervous system kick in more than just sleep, because many of us don't even get enough sleep.
Right.
So by giving ourselves a good half hour of just relaxing helps counteract the daily effects of that parasympathetic nervous system. And I think this is really important, why you exercise, because it helps offset that. You know, a great book is Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. It talks about that, and why, you know, you look at the zebras and anybody else in Africa, they just kind of graze around, they hang out, and then a lion comes, and for a period of, you know, a couple of 3 minutes, everybody's full bore, right? They're going full on. And then if the lion doesn't catch the zebra, they both go out and relax.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And we don't allow ourselves that time to relax. And I think, unfortunately, more and more of the education of this is falling on the trainers and coaches. The public is being educated as to why they should be fat, why they should be diseased, why they should be this and ADD and DAD and all the other stuff. There's almost so much stuff telling them why they should be this way.
Yeah.
But nobody's telling them that that's not true. That they're more than that, and they have these other things going along with them, and they don't get that message from anybody. And trainers are, a lot of them were doing such good work out there, but we don't sometimes even have the time because we're racked up with client after client. But I think if trainers could take an approach of either, you know, putting together a nice white paper or helping the clients understand this, the clients are going to see more success, and the clients will stay with the trainer, so the trainer won't have to go out and continually backfill their clients.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Very interesting. So, I mean, for some people, I have two follow-ups. For the person that is really locked into overdrive on their parasympathetic nervous system, they could simply start off by listening to those two types of music for 10 minutes with their eyes open. Just spending that time doing there would maybe be a really, really nice baby step for them. Is that pretty close?
Absolutely. Actually, I would even suggest listening to it on the way home from work. Right, because I'm sure that there's a lot of folks that are stressed out, and if they just put on classical music on the way home from work, that would be a huge first step in calming them down.
Okay, very cool. And what is it? Because I do almost 80% of mine. I would guess I don't keep track of it. One of my goals is to be eyes closed the whole time, because it seems to make the meditation part better. What is it about eyes closed?
Well, there's two different ones. When I did Zen meditation, when I lived in L.A., they had us sit and stare at the wall with our eyes open.
Mm-hmm.
It was a blank wall, so there wasn't a lot of distraction, but it was to keep our eyes open. One is to help you so you don't fall asleep.
And then, two,
many times when we close our eyes, we do see visions, and this is getting into a realm that is too deep for right now, but we are always constantly receiving images. I won't say visions, but images.
Mm-hmm.
And so the chance of us, when our eyes close, we see an image, we'll grab that image and follow it and see where it goes. And then all of a sudden we're having a communication with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can learn to see the image as if we're looking out a window, and the image just goes by, and then it's out of frame. It comes in frame, out of frame, as opposed to jumping out the window and following it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think either one is appropriate. I can sit and meditate and contemplate, if you will, mm-hmm. both eyes open, eyes closed. I love visualization with my eyes closed. You know, mm-hmm. that part is, there are those individuals that can do it, they're open, but I like visualization with my eyes closed. Meditation can be done with the eyes open or closed, and especially if you do a walking meditation out in nature.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's very cool.
And that's just real quick, that's another way for a person to actually help with their fitness is we all hear walking's good. Well, this is not the fitness part. This is the mental fitness part.
Yeah.
When you walk in nature, there's an innate calmness in nature. If you go deep into a forest, we're bombarded with sounds and sirens and screeching tires and yelling people and all this other stuff. But you can find a park nearby or a brook or something and walk for a half hour in nature, not just listening to the sounds. That in mm-hmm. itself is meditative.
Hmm. Yeah, very cool. And just so people don't, because I think people can skew things if they hear this kind of stuff one way or the other, I like the word, it's meditation and the visualization are two different things, it sounds like. And it's not about thinking about your, it's not about thinking and thinking about your to-do list. It's about contemplating maybe outcomes or goals, maybe potentially. Is that pretty close?
Yeah, I don't want to break it down into semantics, but I do see a difference. It's like the difference of, I'm not going to win the race. I believe I can win the race. I won the race, right?
Yeah.
So you have visualization, contemplation, and meditation. Mm-hmm. Visualization is actively participating in creating your future by what mm-hmm. you desire. So you visualize it, you feel it, you smell it, you experience it completely, visualize it. Contemplation is kind of that inquiry that you talked about with Wayne Dyer, right, that questioning. Mm-hmm. So you take an idea of, how is this belief helping me? Or how is mm-hmm. this belief hurting me? Mm-hmm. And you sit there and think about that, and think about it and nothing else. You think about that one idea. And you think about it, think about it, think about it. That's when other ways of change will come around, such as, how can I make this more fun? How can I make working out more fun? And you contemplate on how to do that. And you just – contemplation is focusing on one idea and one idea only, and focusing on getting a resolution to that idea. Meditation is the sole purpose of engaging the sympathetic nervous system. It's a time to relax. It's a time to let everything go. You know, all the balloons that you've been holding on to for the whole day, you know, the balloons of stress, tension, mm-hmm. anxiety, worry. You sit down and you open your hands and you let them all go. And it's a point of just being able to take a time out, basically, and relax.
Sure.
That can be done through listening to very calm music, a walk in nature, sitting with your eyes closed, or sitting with your eyes closed and listening to music. Did that help kind of define?
Yeah, that definitely clears it up, and I think makes it very, again, they probably can all trickle into each other here and there, but it makes it very clear that there is a delineation between those three things.
Yes, exactly. And they're all have their – it's just like a tools, right? These are all tools that we have, just like you go to the gym, you have different equipment. You have bands and kettlebells and chains and ropes and dumbbells and barbells. Mm-hmm. All of them serve the benefit of fitness. All of these three things that I talked about serve the benefit of mental fitness.
Very cool. Well, before we wrap up, Greg, is there anything else that you want to hit on, talk about that jumped into your mind that you think would be valuable? Any kind of new projects? You mentioned your audio tracks and stuff like that you work on in regards to fitness. That sounds really cool and exciting. But I just wanted to give you a little bit of a second or two here, open forum to touch on those things if you need to.
I appreciate that, Troy. Thanks so much. I'd just like to put out my blog. My website's attached to my blog, but I'm on my blog every day, and I I think I give some really good information. At least that's the feedback I've been getting from my readers, and that's at www.warriormindcoach.com/blog. But as we're approaching, Troy, you know, we're in the November, then December, and then come the new year. Mm-hmm. I really, really, really would like to help people and help them understand it is important to set goals. It's the only thing that drives us. There's been so much research done versus goal setters versus non-goal setters accomplishing 100 times more than those that haven't set goals. Just because you haven't achieved a goal doesn't mean it works. I mean, it doesn't work. It means that you didn't set it correctly. And so by working through the achievable outcomes, the smarter goals, and breaking them down, I mean, we all deserve to have a better life than we have right now. Our life is great. All of our lives are great compared to 90% else of the world.
Yeah.
And there is a obesity issue, and there is a issues of other things. However, we all can create a better life, and it all starts with knowing what do you want. That's the biggest question I would like the readers or the listeners to contemplate is, what do you want? Most people know what they don't want, Troy.
Yeah.
They don't know what they want. And sometimes they have to say, I don't want this, and then flip 180 and go, oh, this is really what I want. Because if you know what you want, then you have a better chance of getting it. If you know what you don't want, anything will satisfy you.
Yeah, that's a good closing right there. That is awesome. Again, great pleasure. It's always – I forgot how fun it was to have our chat the first time we had it. Awesome content for people. Just like I said in the beginning, if we can kind of get a little bit of a smidgen of a grasp on operation of our mind and how it can help us do the things that we all want, I think that's the key to everything. And like I've always, like you said that, and if everybody has a chance to get better, I have always believed that. And so by just taking these little actions that many people will be out there to be skeptical or poo-poo, just try it. Try meditating for 6.5 minutes or something. But very cool stuff. I appreciate your time, Greg. Again, his website is thewarriormindcoach.com. Get over to look at his blog. He's got a really cool – today's Veterans Day 2010. Some really cool quotes from MacArthur on there. Those are really cool.
Oh,
and I'm sure you're putting up a ton of great content. If you're on there every day and the content you're putting is anything even close to what you had today, then they're going to get, you know, it's free. So well more than your money's worth. So Troy Anderson again, sign off from KettlebellFatLossTraining.com and KettlebellWorkoutVideos.com. Make sure you come by either one of those sites. We'd love to help you out, serve you, and help you make progress with your workouts and with kettlebell training. So appreciate it again, Greg Swanson, WarriorMindCoach.com. Have a great day.